Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of July 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Hear about the cash grain market with the Andersons Ben Pruce from their Estherville, Iowa facility. And take a look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. That report contains some very interesting figures for wheat, soybeans, and corn. We'll go through all of those as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's take a look at these numbers as they settled up on a Friday afternoon. July soft red winter wheat down 22 cents today at $5.14¾. December at $5.47¾, 22 and three quarters lower. The March at $5.69½, down 22 cents. That all for the soft red. Hard red down 21 and a quarter at $6.34¼ in the July. And September at $6.36¼, down 11. July corn futures at $3.93¾, down 3/4. September 8 cents lower in the corn pit. It's $3.78¼. December 384¾, down 8, and the March at 396, down 7¾. July of next year, $4.11¾, down 7¼. December of 2015 at 422¼, down 3¾. Soybeans, July futures, 34 cents lower, $12.95¾. August at $11.95¾, down 37. November, $10.75, 18 cents lower. And January beans at $10.84. Futures there down 17¾. July of next year at $11.09½, down 15½ cents. November of 2015 at $10.87½, 9½ cents lower. Bean meal down $12.50. Bean oil, 68 cents lower. Live cattle futures in the August at 149.12½, we're up 97½. Feeders at 210.37½, up 22½ cents for the day. And the lean hogs finished at $132.80. They were unchanged on the afternoon. The August there at 128.67½, or 72½ cents higher. Of course, you're listening to Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support local landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Taking a look now at the outside markets, crude oil futures trading the August at $100.67 a barrel, down $2.26. The RBOB gasoline at $2.98, that's 4⅛ cents lower, and ethanol futures at $2.09, down 3½ cents. The spread between the two has narrowed up by 0.3 cents today at 81⅙ cents. Natural gas at $4.13¹, 0.9 cents higher. Diesel fuel down 3¾ cents at $2.86¹. And gold futures at $1,337.40 an ounce, $1.80 lower. The U.S. dollar at 80.185. That's down 0.06 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high of 82 degrees on the afternoon. And then this evening, a 50% chance of showers, some thunderstorms after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, a low of 66. And tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms likely mainly before 1, mostly cloudy otherwise, a high of 86. South to southwest winds at 7 to 11 miles an hour, though gust of 15. Chance of precipitation tomorrow set at 60%. And Saturday night, a 50% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, and 71 degrees on a south-southwest wind at about 10 miles an hour. And then Sunday, a 40% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy and 68. Monday, a 40% chance of thunderstorms, partly sunny and 82. Tuesday, sunny and 72. And Wednesday, mostly sunny and 74 degrees. By the time we get to Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies and 76. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. This is the closing market report for the 11th day of July, 2014. It is a Friday afternoon. This morning at 11 o'clock Central Time, the United States Department of Agriculture released its latest world agricultural supply and demand estimates, a crop production report, too, that has to do with wheat. Let's go through some of those numbers with Mike Zuzulo. He's on from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, USDA released some numbers this morning. There were some surprises and some explanations, and maybe we ought to start with the explanations. USDA said of the national corn yield and total production that there would be 75 million bushels less this year than there were last year. Probably surprised quite a few folks. And they simply said too early to tell on the yield, so we're not going to up it. And as far as production, we think there are fewer acres out there. And when you total it all up with the current yield, it's going to come up 75 million bushels short of last year. Kind of an interesting commentary.
Yeah, it was. And I think this goes with, you know, the elasticity spreadsheet and talk that we had with the Commodity Week guest a couple weeks ago, Todd, that we got down to 394 for a low in July corn. If I plug that into the spreadsheet for lead month corn, then the trade was probably trying to factor in between a 2050 and a 2075 carryover, 2.050 carryover. And using USDA's 13.335 total demand number, the yield then, what we have factored in as of today's close using that spreadsheet, is about a 168.5. So in and of itself, that report and the U.S. ending stocks for corn, and I would say also the U.S. ending stocks for beans, were not negative. They may have been deemed no better than neutral, but they weren't negative. The spotlight was once again, just like it was on the acreage report, back on the wheat market, and the wheat continued to show no signs of bottoming, taking us down to, you know, levels not seen since late June, early July of 2010, because USDA really thumped the demand there, saying we haven't found demand yet, even though we're at $225 a ton for soft red wheat at the Gulf of Mexico. And so you could see pretty clearly again in this report, just like the acreage and stocks report, the wheat really is a major fundamental factor and sentiment leader to how the funds trade, with another a significant increase in selling pressure after the numbers were released.
And so you're suggesting that this kept the pressure on all the grains and oilseed markets for the day?
Yeah, in fact, the spring wheat was the leader to the downside after the report, dropping almost 5%. Now, the interesting feature about it is that although the September spring wheat closed down 2%, the July spring wheat closed and settled up about 95 cents a bushel, up 15%. And so haven't been able to find out how many bushels were traded there. I have been told by colleagues in Chicago there was an actual trade there, but this was the heart and soul of the break. Interesting that the corn and beans and the soft red wheat did not care, and soft red wheat actually in Chicago made new lows on the close, even though the spring wheat came back. So a lot of unexplained price action in the last 5 minutes or so trade of the spring wheat contract that we'll have to dig deeper into Monday.
Mm-hmm. You suppose we'll see a delayed bounce then on Monday and turn things higher?
You know, I think we're back to a weather market, Todd, at this stage of the game. The trade is not going to buy the grains ahead of the August report unless they have a weather reason to do so. I mean, this is unless something geopolitically hits. You know, earlier today, Dow Jones confirmed a Bloomberg story late yesterday that a Cargill oilseed plant had been taken over by armed people and that it was shut down since July 4th, and it's just now getting leaked out to the media. Unless something like that would come in and shock the market and surprise the market, thinking that the Black Sea would not be as big of a negative force on the demand side of the equation for wheat for the United States, and you're probably waiting for the corn and bean weather Sunday and looking at maybe potentially short covering in the short term with the idea that this colder weather, if it sits in for 10 days on the models, that may start to cause some concern about heating degree units and how the northern corn belt is getting along.
Let's take up ending stocks for corn and soybeans. We'll go with the 14-15 ending stocks, so not this year, but for the fall of 2014-15. For corn, 1.801 billion bushels. That's actually really close to the trade guess. That's above the 1.726 in June, but trade guess was 1.807, so 1.801, right on the money. And the soybeans at 415 million. Trade guess was 417 million. I'm wondering, though, when I look at some of these numbers, and maybe it's the corn number that I'm wondering more about than the soybean number, at 1.8 billion bushels, is the trade moving too low in its price tag for next year's corn crop?
Well, here again, I think they've added some bushels to the yield number. I think they're probably running 3 bushels. If that elasticity spreadsheet's right, we're running closer to a 168.5 yield instead of 165.3.
But aren't they looking closer to a 2 billion bushel carryout? I mean, what does that come out with, a 2.2, 2.1 or something like that?
Yeah, just under a 2.1 carryover. To answer your question, yes, I think they're running it too cheap, but they haven't found a low in the wheat, and the trade is very nervous about the situation with the MIR-162 genetics and what that's caused politically and what that has caused in terms of trade of corn. One thing that you can say about the coarse grain number, the global coarse grain number, Todd, was probably the most bearish number out there in today's report at face value, because coarse grains jumped about 6.8 million tons. That's the biggest since 1998. Our country, the United States, was 70% of that. China and Brazil was the other 30%. So the trade's probably standing back saying, yeah, we've got a pretty big carryover factored in, but what if China starts to sell more of their corn because their crop just got bigger in the last month? And I think this is where, again, the wheat and the corn are trading very close sentimentally, I think.
Anything that this changed your mind about in the marketplace today and the way you're considering moving forward?
No, in fact, it just solidified the idea that you can't lift hedges on this type of a bean number, and in beans, you cannot lift hedges on this type of a wheat price reaction in the corn. I still feel as though that the cash corn sales should be limited in the corn especially, and to a lesser degree in the beans. I don't think we're out of the woods in the beans. We talked again about this 2 weeks ago on Commodity Week about the next 30 days being a really big deal for the beans. I haven't gotten very many good bean reports from clients in the last 10, 15 days. These next 20 days are going to be huge and probably dictate whether the crop gets bigger or not. And so I still think the beans, you can hedge them, but I'd do it in paper in case you end up in 15, 20 days from now with pretty cool, dry conditions that, you know, you don't get much of a pod fill on. And so this is where it gets pretty hard for the beans. And the corn, it's a lot easier because you can just keep your paper hedges on until the wheat bottoms.
Speaking of Commodity Week, you will be one of our panelists, along with Aaron Curtis from Midco and Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities this afternoon. Our guest, Mike, will be Brian Basting. He's at Advanced Trading there in Bloomington, Illinois. Looking forward to talking to you on and on about 15 minutes or so on our home radio station. Other folks can wait and hear it about 4 o'clock at willag.org. Thanks so much.
Can't wait, Todd. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Don't forget, you can find all of the USDA numbers, if you'd like, on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. My Twitter feed at the moment is there. But you might want to go over to the USDA Reports link, which is on the right-hand side of the page. That'll give you much more detail than what I've got set there for the Twitter feed, although you can find what USDA actually released in the more terms of supply and demand tables directly. However you find them, those are numbers that are important to you. We think they are, and we hope you do too. That's why they're up on the website, and we hope it's a really great service to you. By the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, at Commodity Week, if you want to follow David Dickey on Twitter, you can do that too, at David A. Dickey. Well, up next, a story that aired from WBEZ out of Chicago, Illinois, in that area. And if you're familiar, you'll know that this one is a very popular radio station in Chicago. So we thought it might be kind of important to hear what they hear about genetically modified crops. This story is produced by Miriam Soeb. She talks a bit about the crops with some central Illinois farmers.
On the edges of the field, we have issues with weeds. But you see in the second row, there's no weeds back in there.
That's Lynn Warfel, a central Illinois farmer who grows corn and soybeans in Tolono.
I'm nearing the end of my tenure. This is my 52nd crop. So I'm trying to simplify everything. And the simple way, easy way to do it nowadays is just plain corn and plain soybeans, both of which are GMO.
Warfel started using corn and soybeans that have been genetically modified, which means scientists have been able to identify and multiply the strongest and the best genes. He says he doesn't necessarily have to worry about the weather and has seen a huge difference in his yield compared to the years before GMOs were around.
About 25 years ago, we had a drought, and this was before the current genetics. And my corn that year yielded just over 100 bushels an acre. With the change in the genetics, last year's drought impacted my corn too. Instead of 200 bushels, it was only 155. It was 55 bushels better than my corn was earlier because of the genetics.
According to the Illinois Farm Bureau, 89% of corn in Illinois and 92% of soybeans are grown from genetically engineered seeds. Warfel says GMO corn and soybeans are more likely to make it through harsh weather conditions.
It stands too much moisture better, or not enough moisture better. So it's more productive, more consistently than it used to be.
Warfel says using GMO crops also helps to reduce his bottom line. He spends less on fuel because he doesn't need to be out on the field cultivating it. He also employs fewer people because there's not as much work that needs to be done. But not all farmers are on board with GMOs. Dave Bishop is the owner of Prairie Earth Farm. His farm is also based in central Illinois, but grows organic and conventional non-GMO produce, including corn and soybeans.
I think there are better ways to address issues of pest resistance and weather changes, specifically through different kinds of crop rotations, use of cover crops. So there are many ways we can address these issues that, in my opinion, are far better than genetically engineered crops.
Bishop says he doesn't believe in the hype that GMOs are better at resisting drought or too much rain.
I think that conventional crops yield as well. They are more profitable in most cases. At least here we have a significant premium in the marketplace for non-GMO crops.
But Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Bob Flyder says despite the significant crop devastation due to the drought of 2012, crops were still able to survive.
If you think about the drought that we had a couple of years ago, quite candidly, you know, it was probably the worst weather conditions that we've had in Illinois ever in terms of the heat and the dryness, but yet we still had a crop. If we hadn't had those kinds of seeds and the kind of scientific research that went into developing seeds that could grow and develop a crop under those conditions, we might have had virtually nothing, and that would have been a disaster.
Flyder says as resources around the world continue to become depleted, it's important to support research and find ways to increase production in order to feed the growing population. And that is a topic that pits the debate of good versus bad when it comes to the overall impact of GMOs. I'm Miriam Soeb.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market on the phone line. From the Andersons facility in Estherville, Iowa, is Ben Pruce. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Yeah, afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about crop conditions there, what the corn crop looks like in particular, beans blooming, and how they're doing.
Sure, yeah. A corn crop looks awesome. There's a color of green that I haven't seen in about 4 years. Just a healthy, robust crop. Obviously, we faced some issues with storms passing through. We had some hail issues just a little bit, but, you know, corn's probably 6 foot tall, and we keep the sunshine on it here. Maybe give it a couple weeks, maybe 10 days or so, we start looking for some tassels.
No, that'll be, well, that's well behind where we are, kind of expected in your area. How wet was your month of June where you are?
How wet was it?
Yeah, by comparison. Were you twice as wet? How much rainfall did you get?
Yeah, the month of June, we in Spencer, where we have an elevator, it was the most in the state, and we received about 12 and three-quarters inches of rain.
So you would be a good indicator of how good this crop might be in these kinds of wet years. We're not sure that that crop can come on and be really, really good, but indications from your point of view are that she's holding on to the nitrogen and looks really good.
It, it doesn't seem like it's gone down the river or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination. And our opinion is such that instead of participating in upsides, we are trying to protect the downs.
And how are you doing that?
We've had to go to the options market because obviously the cash isn't giving us a whole lot. Buying long set puts and selling short March calls just to earn a little more equity out there.
Okay, so here's a question I have for you. Over the past two or three years, we've said more often than not, where is everybody putting this crop? We don't see it. It's not on the ground. Will we see it there this year if things come to fruition as they appear to be at this point, if they're as good as you think they are?
Well, yes. I mean, it's. I'm not saying this crop is the one, but it's. This is the crop that it feels like it's going to swing the tide to where we're talking $3.50 and we're hoping for $4 corn again.
Oh.
Well, I mean, look, we've lost 60 cents in the last 40 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's where's the bottom in all this? We're not real sure. And you continue to look at the 10-day forecast, and the crop continues to just come along and progress nicely, and there's no real threats. And quite honestly, we're running out of reasons to be bullish.
How about on the old crop? Are you still finding corn, or did they shut the bin doors? They're going to have to move it eventually, I suppose.
You would think so. It's kind of shut off here for a minute as far as guys just flat pricing cash corn, but there's still plenty of corn to be had. Basis is actually most processors rolled to the set and faded their bids when they rolled, and they just aren't really working that hard for corn because they can find it fairly easily and cheaply. And they're going to have to sell it at some point, and at this point it's just going to be a give-up sale, which is incredibly disappointing.
Very, very disappointing. Soybeans, what are the conditions like in the field?
Soybeans are good. They're also looks healthy. We've had some hail issues, and it's actually pretty limited right around our elevator here in Epperly, but crop looks good. They're starting to close rows. Guys are a little concerned. A lot of volunteer corn. They're finally getting out, dried up for us, getting sprayed. Beans are clicking right along. I mean, here today, I would say we're maybe just a touch behind, but nothing to be concerned about at this point.
And basis for the beans looks like what?
Today we're 30 under here at the elevator, 30 over the queue. Processors, when they roll, they kind of fade their basis again. And, even the bean processors, which is kind of a surprise to us, they faded, and, we haven't really heard too much about them, but it feels like they're going to have to step back in here.
And very quickly, your bids.
We are $3.59 cash corn and $12.25 cash beans.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks, Doug.
Ben Pruce is with the Andersons, joins us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Back in just a couple of minutes with the weather forecast.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Blueberry Muffin Day. The word muffin first appeared in Britain around the 11th century. But until the 20th century, muffins were not a marketable baked good because of their size. They grew stale too quickly. It's also St. Benedict Feast Day, patron of farm workers. On this day in agricultural history in 1792, the first issue of the Farmer's Almanac was published by Robert Bailey Thomas. The journal contained long-term weather predictions, planting schedules, astronomical tables, astrological lore, recipes, anecdotes, and other stories of rural interest. The journal has been published every year without a break to the present day. By the way, the first issue sold 3,000 copies. That number tripled in the second year of publication. And by the time of Thomas's death, sales had swelled to a 250,000 copies. In 1826, John Fowler was born. Fowler, an English engineer, helped develop the steam-hauled plow and several other specialty-use plows, including the mold drainage plow shown at the Great Exposition of 1851. Fowler died of tetanus after being thrown from a horse. And in 1987, according to the United Nations, world population hit 5 billion people. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now here's Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with an update of this week's weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for July so far is 71 degrees, about 4 degrees below average. The statewide average rainfall is 1.4 inches and 30% above average for this part of July. Amounts of 2 to 4 inches or more were common in the northern half of the state. Meanwhile, amounts were closer to an inch or less in the southern half of the state. With the cooler and wetter weather, soil moisture remains high in much of northern and central Illinois and a little drier in southern Illinois. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend and next week indicates warm weather this weekend before cooling off next week. Highs on Saturday and Sunday will range from the low 80s in northern Illinois to the low 90s in southern Illinois. More rain is expected over the weekend. Rainfall amounts will be heaviest in northern Illinois with a potential of 2 to 3 inches, while an inch or less is expected in central and southern Illinois. Monday through Thursday will be cooler with highs in the upper 60s and low 70s in northern Illinois, in the upper 70s and low 80s in southern Illinois. Overnight lows will get down into the 50s in northern and central Illinois and close to 60 in southern Illinois. Things will start to warm up again by next weekend. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks, of course, go to Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his update of the weekly weather forecast. Now, here are the way the numbers settled for the week in Chicago at the CME Group. Friday to Friday changes. The high for the corn this week at $4.13¼. The overall low at $3.94. The trading week session settlement price at $3.99¾, down 17 and a quarter cents in the July corn from the previous week. It and the December corn contract both gapped lower on the week. December at $3.84¾, down 30 and a half cents. Soybeans traded to a high of $11.86 in the July contract, the low at $12.49¼. Settlement price there at $12.94¾. July futures down 92 cents. November bean futures gapped weekly lower at about just half a cent, $10.75 in the November contract. The settlement price down 58.5 cents. July soybean meal at $4.21.80, down $25.20. July bean oil at $36.71, finished $1.85 lower. Soft red winter wheat in the July or harvest month contract down 53¼ cents from the previous Friday settlement at $5.14¾ per bushel, and the July hard red at $6.34½, finished 62¾ lower than it did on the previous Friday. Outside down was posted in the live cattle futures. August contract, it finished at $149.12½ for the week, off $5.87½. The August feeders at $210.37½ per 100 pounds, finished $7.25 lower, and lean hogs in the August at $128.67½, down $2.00. $0.92. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.